Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my new series, Parrish. My character, Gray Parrish, was a getaway driver.
I'm retired from life. You know that.
He's in a world over his head.
Tell me about this driver job.
And he's asked to start to figure things out.
I did what you told me to.
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive budget beach finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Ocean by H10 Hotels and do your deal at CheapCaribbean.com.
Welcome back, Snafu listeners. We're back to discuss a dicey subject. A far-right coup, an attempt to overthrow the democratically elected government of the United States of America.
Because you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength and you have to be strong.
We have a breach of the Capitol!
Nope, not that one.
In the United States District Court, Washington, D.C., Chief Justice Edward C. Eicher presides at the trial of 30 alleged seditionists.
There we go, that's the one. That's right, my friends. Back in 1944, the Nazis tried to overthrow the U.S. government with the help of some U.S. congressmen, no less. I'm talking about the Great Sedition Trial of 1944, which is the subject of a history podcast hosted by Rachel Maddow called Ultra. Now, Ultra and Snafu have a lot in common. Both podcasts are deep dives into important moments in American history, which are largely forgotten. And yet, they feel oddly prescient to our world today. So, naturally, I wanted to sit down and talk with Ultra's creator. So today, I'm coming into your feed with a treat. My conversation with Rachel Maddow about Ultra and Snafu. We talk about these two extraordinary stories, forgotten history in general, the roots of authoritarianism, and how it all weaves into current events. Rachel is well known for being a rigorous on-air journalist, author, and podcaster. She's curious, a deep thinker, profoundly insightful, and pretty damn funny. All of which makes her a hell of a lot of fun to talk to. I really enjoyed this conversation. I learned a lot, and I think you will too. So here it is, my chat with Rachel Maddow. Hello?
Hi, and hey. This is Rachel Maddow.
Rachel Maddow, it's so cool to meet you. This is awesome.
Nice to meet you too. It's great. This is very exciting.
Indeed, I agree. Thanks so much for jumping into our Snafu universe. What's happening? Where are you?
I'm in rural Dirt Road, Western Massachusetts.
Dirt Road, I don't know that town.
It's kind of the ambient vibe of where I am. We're really out in the middle of nowhere. It's fantastic.
What are you hiding from, Rachel? What's going on? You've
humans?
Yeah, okay. That's fair. Are you in a bunker?
What's weird, actually, and this is true, the cottage that I'm in right now, this little house in which we built this studio, audio studio and stuff so I can do my TV show from here, has a legit nuclear bomb shelter. In the basement.
Whoa. Like wait, because concrete. You built it or because it was already there?
No, it was there. It was built by whoever had this house in the 50s. And it's got concrete wow. like this and triple rebar. And when we came in to like flatten out the floor and make everything normal, the contractor was like, we have to leave the basement.
Can I tell you something? I'm not like a crazy prepper kind of doomsday person, but like, I would like to have a bunker.
Mm-hmm. It just seems like a nice option.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is fun. I would love to go deeper into apocalypse preparation, but we have some really fun stuff to talk about. First of all, your podcast, Ultra, was the number one podcast on Apple for what, like 5 weeks? A bunch of weeks.
A bunch of weeks. It was number one, and then it was less than number one, and then it was back up to number one again. So it was really a surprise and very exciting. Yeah.
And very well deserved. I listened to it twice. It was so fun. I listened to it all the way through, and then I was like, I got to hear that again, but I don't have as much time. So I listened to it at like 1.8 speed. And it's funny, when you listen to something sped up like that, everyone sounds unbelievably intelligent.
I had the opposite problem, which is that my doctor, who is, you know, just my doctor, like kind of my friend, but my doctor, texted me all concerned that there was something wrong with me because he had listened to Ultra and he was like, you really, I know you've had issues with depression and stuff in the past and you really, turns out he was listening to it on 0.75
Oh
speed.
My God.
And he thought I was really down.
That's amazing.
He thought he had special medical insight yeah. into what was going on with this podcast.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It was great.
Ultra, it is an extraordinary story. It is extremely well told. It's incredibly engaging and really, really fun. And I would love to, just for our snafu listeners, if you haven't heard Ultra, can you break it down? Just like, what's the basic story?
The basic story is, in the lead up to World War II, there was a really, really big Nazi, and I mean that specifically, I don't mean like Nazis, I mean the Nazis, big Nazi effort to try to exploit what the Germans called kernels of disturbance in the United States. And so they were trying to propagandize us really heavily. They supported a bunch of American native fascist movements that were way scarier than we remember them in history. And they paid a bunch of members of Congress and senators to be on their side for this effort. And it all sort of culminated in the Great Sedition Trial of 1944, when nearly 30 of the folks who were involved with the Nazis in these various plots got put on trial. And they got off. There was a mistrial, and they were all let go.
It's so profound, this story. It is so intense, and it's totally mind-blowing. In your description just now, you said the trial was the Great Sedition Trial of, what, 1944.
Yeah.
That implies that this was like a landmark event that we all know and understand. What's so incredible about this story to me, there's lots of things incredible about it, but one of the most incredible things is how forgotten it is. And it's something that I think our podcasts share, which is these sort of forgotten history stories that are insanely important. And one of the historians in your podcast actually says at one point, I'm a PhD in history, and most of my colleagues who are PhDs in history have never heard of this. And so then, of course, the general public has no idea. And I wonder, why is it forgotten?
Well, it's, you know, I was thinking about the parallels with that and with Abel Archer, with what you cover in Snafu. And I think there is something that's like important for us to reflect on as people who tell stories and who are interested in history, which is that sometimes the reason something is forgotten is because of who won and who lost, right?
Like, of course,
the good
history
news
is told by the winners.
History is told by the winners. And sometimes what the winners most want is for us to forget that the thing happened. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely, I feel like that's a little bit of the story that you unfold in Snafu, like with the CIA doing its assessment of what happened with Abel Archer and whether it was a close call. They're like, no, 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 it was fine. It was no big deal.
Right.
And that's part of the history that you uncover and that you tell in the story. But it's also important that the CIA wants it to be minimized, wants it not to be remembered as a significant thing.
Right.
And this, a sort of different version of that happens in my story where the good news ending, to the extent that there is one, is that all of the elected officials who were part of this plot, who were the real bad guys here, the public knew enough, they found out enough about what those guys were up to that they voted them all out of office. Like,
right.
All but one of them got voted out of office. And so even though a lot of them were household names, really influential members of the House and the Senate at the time, once they got turfed out by voters who were disgusted by their behavior, they went from being big deals to being losers, and the losers get forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of the history that we have to contend with is how much are the players here minimized in history, either because it's convenient for somebody or because the good guys won, and how much does that affect whether this story is easy to find or easy to be told.
Sure.
So it's I find that dynamic interesting because you have to put yourself then in the story in terms of how hard it is for you to find these things.
Well, it's a little bit of a scary reality when you think the forgotten stories of history are very often some of the most important, mm-hmm. because the reason that they're forgotten is that they were either painful or embarrassing or extremely problematic. And yet those are the things that we do have the potential to learn the most from.
And the other circumstance in which that happens is because it was a really scary thing and some Americans or some characters in the story rose up and did the right thing and neutralized the danger.
Right. And the
that's
heroes,
great.
Yeah.
But that's also those heroes. We also need to learn that story. You know,
yeah.
So it can be like a deliberate shunt this away, let's not think about it, but it can also be a like, whoo, close call, let's forget about it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so how the hell did you find it? Like with Snafu, we knew we wanted to do a podcast and we wanted to do something kind of history and irreverent, and we set about looking for the thing. Did you know you wanted to do a podcast and look for something exciting and meaningful, or did you just dig up this story or stumble on it and then say, this has to be told?
So I sort of feel like all the best stories that I've ever been involved in telling come out of ignorance, like come out of legitimate curiosity. Like, I don't understand where this came from, or this thing that everybody thinks makes sense to them doesn't make sense to me. And I was going through that sort of train of thought just as part of my news, you know, my day job at MSNBC, thinking about Holocaust denial. So we're having this big upsurge in anti-Semitism and kind of anti-Semitism wedded to political power, which is a very dangerous thing. And at the core of all of it is this sort of burbling thing where people say the Holocaust didn't happen. And I've always felt like it's not obvious to me how that can exist intellectually.
Sure.
It's one thing to be prejudiced. It's another thing to say this obvious thing in history of which we have all this proof, I choose to contend that it didn't happen. And so I was interested in where that came from, and particularly where it came from in the first instance. Like, how early on did people start denying it? And what I found, to my surprise, is that Holocaust denial really came from the United States. It didn't come from Germany. And it happened really early on. It happened in the 40s,
wow.
Which is nuts because there's all these American GIs and refugees from Europe, including refugees from Germany, coming here who are eyewitnesses, who are survivors, who had family members killed or who were liberating the concentration camps. I mean, it's all this irrefutable evidence. And yet this thing emerges in the late 40s in the United States and then starts pinging around the world where we're going to say that didn't happen. So I was interested in where the hell did that come from and why, and who were the characters who dreamed this up, knowing that it was false but concocting it for a political reason. And in trying to figure that out, which is a story I'm still going to tell, but I haven't gotten there yet, I realized that actually those folks came out of this milieu during World War II in the United States that we've forgotten about. And they all went on trial. And oh, my God, the judge died in the middle of the trial and they were all set free. And then what happened to them? So it ended up being kind of the prequel to the story that I wanted to tell. But I realized there was enough there that I should probably tell it.
That is fascinating. I feel like that's kind of how some of the best stories do come about.
Can I ask you a snafu question about that?
Please, yeah.
I thought the thing that I most admired about the storytelling in Snafu was your sort of fearlessness about casting doubt on the story. So obviously for everybody's listened to it, like there's lots of twists and lots of, you know, backing up and reconsidering stuff that's earlier been presented. And I wondered when you constructed the story and when you decided to do it, did you know about the doubt and uncertainty and sort of wooliness of the bottom line of that story when you started? Or did you think it was a more certain story when you started and you only got to that, you know, more mature, complex bottom line once you were into it in the middle of the research?
Yeah, it was the latter. Like everything you read about Abel Archer in the sort of, to the extent that it's in the zeitgeist, just little blips and blurbs, it sounds like a very cut and dry thing. But of like anything, the more you dig, the more nuanced it becomes. And then it became for us as storytellers, just feeling a kind of responsibility to reflect that nuance and the complexity. You know, even historians have some different perspectives on it that are very meaningful. I don't know. We really wanted to lean into the integrity of it, and that made it a little bit messier of a story. But ultimately, the messiness kind of gave rise to some really exciting questions and kind of pontifications. And that's really where we wound up kind of putting the focus in that last episode.
Well, it makes it more profound and more real. It also makes it more of a contribution to the history of it, right? To have all the interviews that you do and to have an honest reflection of the real, you know, the legitimate contention with the various facts and the various perspectives on it. It's a real work of history with all the jokes included, but also it does get you to a more profound place in terms of getting I think encouraging critical thinking about seemingly cut and dry episodes. I just thought that was really, like I said, mature and complex and cool.
Go on.
Also, you guys, you're just so handsome, and it was just
no. That's I'm literally like getting chills. That means so much to hear from you, Rachel. I really, really appreciate that. Yeah, we really put a ton of work into it, and so that means a lot.
With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive budget beach finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Ocean by H10 Hotels and do your deal at CheapCaribbean.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you, something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
I think you had it harder than I did, because in my case, the Great Sedition Trial of 1944 is forgotten. The only histories of it have been written by people who sympathized with the fascist defendants. Mm. And so all the histories of it have all been about how they were railroaded and it was terrible that these people were put on trial and how ridiculous this contention that the Nazis were working with any Americans. Mm. Do you believe how prejudiced the Department of Justice is against good American conservatives? And so all the history of it was really biased and all in the same direction. And nobody had ever revisited that history looking at it from a more balanced perspective. And
wow.
So I didn't have to contend with sort of, great, nuanced, honest broker perspectives on both sides. There was just a bunch of claptrap written about it. And nobody had ever done a broader, less, I think, from my perspective, less biased look at the evidence.
I thought Roggi wrote a book, but were you able to dig that up? Is that findable?
Ish. Yeah.
Ish?
I mean,
okay.
If you want to get a copy of it, I can maybe give you a deal. I think I own all the copies of it. It never had like a second printing. It never went anywhere.
Tell us who Roggi is, because I just brought him up out of the blue.
So Roggi is O. John Roggi, who is a German-American, interestingly enough. He grows up in the United States, son of German immigrants, speaking German at home. And he's this wunderkind lawyer and prosecutor and Justice Department official. And he ends up being the crusading prosecutor who tries to bring the sedition trial home, who tries to finish it, who fights against the mistrial. And the great twist in my story in Ultra is when, as the trial is falling apart, Roggi gets leave to go to Germany, and he gets to try to prove his contention that these weren't just conservative Americans who had their own anti-Semitic fascist ideas, that were actually working with the Nazi government. They're being paid by the Germans in many instances. He gets to prove that from the German side, and he interviews all these Nazi prisoners. And they, in fact, give him all the dirt on all the Americans they were working with. And so he's able to prove the collusion, if you will, from the other side. Mm. And by the time he brings those findings home to the United States, we have won the war. Everybody wants to move on. Roggi has become a political figure in a way that he is very much demonized by one side and then ultimately by the other side. And nobody really wants to hear it. And so he does create this really valuable historical record. But by the time it lands, he finally gets it published. He has to fight with the Justice Department to get it declassified and all this stuff. By the time it finally lands in the public record, it's 1961, and this is ancient history, and nobody buys the book, and nobody reviews it, and nobody stocks it in their archives, and it just disappears until, all these decades later, that story ends up being of interest to me because of its resonance with our current situation. And thank God he did it, because the record's there, even though nobody cared about it in his lifetime, and he died in obscurity.
It just raises so many fascinating questions and issues. Okay, so anti-Semitism or racism in all its forms, these are things that most people agree are bad, right?
bad. Bad and gone.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. They also seem embedded in most modern emergences of fascism.
Yeah.
I know throughout history, totalitarianism pops up in many different forms all over the political spectrum. But fascism, and I ask this not as any kind of indictment of conservatism, but fascism in particular seems to bubble up from the right. Why do you think that is?
Well, I do think that there's different types of authoritarianism, right? And there's definitely, left-wing authoritarianism as well.
Of course.
And the when you're talking about, tyrannical forms of government, right-wing authoritarianism, which in some instances is fascism, not always, but in some instances is fascism, ends up having a recurrent appeal in our country and in other Western democracies. I think because people don't like democracy. I mean, the basic idea of democracy is that everybody gets a say.
Yep.
And if you think that you and people like you should get a say, but other people shouldn't, that's an instinct that people have. And there can be left-wing authoritarianism, which is a different drive and comes from a different place and leads to mass murder and
just
terrible
as much mayhem,
outcomes as
of
well.
Course.
Just as much mayhem. But on the right, the way it works is me and my people, we're the only people who should count as citizens. The other people who are technically, you're telling me, ought to be part of this democracy are lesser than or evil or they're interlopers. And we not only need to exclude them from the decision-making process, but we need to blame them for all the things that are going wrong here. And we need to exclude them from the decision-making process and punish them for all the terrible things they've done, because if it was just us in charge, everything would be fine.
Right.
And that's the basic idea. And that's why authoritarianism on the right almost always comes with anti-Semitism. It's either going to be anti-Semitism or it's going to be some other thing that looks like anti-Semitism that is directed towards some other minority group, because you need some out-group to define as the source of all the problems, because you, the in-group, are perfect. And if you were just given full control, everything would be fine.
Right.
And it's just, it's dumb and it's simple and it's recurrent.
Yeah.
And
well, humans, we're dumb.
Yeah.
Humans are dumb. We do dumb things.
And we don't remember what the old dumb things were. So the new dumb things come around and we're like, whoa, wait, you're telling me it's the Jews?
Yeah.
Shocker.
There's that great Hegel quote. The only thing we learn from history is that we learn nothing from history. Yes. And I wonder if you have any thoughts on how we can do better. It feels like with modern technology, we should be able to be better at learning from history. But maybe we're just not wired for it in our DNA.
I think that, fart jokes helps.
Uh-huh.
when you did that whole riff on like the Valentine's, like, I have so many treasons that I love you, like Valentine's for spies.
Uh-huh.
And all this, like the little fake game show that you inserted into it's storytelling skill. And upping the entertainment quotient in direct ratio with the complexity of the story that you're telling, that helps. Like, I don't know that that's technological innovation, but it's an evolution of our sort of ambition to make these stories understandable, memorable, repeatable, both on TV and in this kind of podcast and book world that I'm in too. I try to tell stories in such a way that they stick. And so even if you can't persuade somebody else to listen to Ultra, or you can't persuade somebody else to read my book about Spiro Agnew, if you listen to the podcast or if you read that book, you will have absorbed the story well enough that you can give somebody the gist of it and pass it on. And that's what you're doing in Snafu. That's the whole idea of doing real history that's rigorous and honest and intellectually engaged with the ambiguities and all those things, but it's also fun.
Yeah.
And is also not homework. It's something that's a pleasure. And I think that's, if you've got those skills, that's a mitzvah. That's a service to humanity and to our country to use them that way.
Yeah. You got to give people some candy with the vegetables, right?
You got to do your Nancy astrologer stuff. It's important. Yeah. It turns out to be important.
It is. It's crazy how important astrology was in the Reagan administration. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Growing up in the 80s in San Francisco, I have to tell you, the fact that Nancy's astrologer was in San Francisco, I remember being like kind of proud.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's funny.
This idea that, like, the Rasputin pulling the strings right. in the Reagan White House might be this lady in Nob Hill right. was actually, like, a source of regional pride for me.
Oh, that's great. I think the thing that I feel like is missing is, and maybe this is maybe this is a book pitch for us. Maybe we do a book together. And it's basically like the lessons of history. These are the lessons. And then here are the events that teach us those lessons. So you can no longer say like, well, I don't know how to interpret that, or I don't know what to learn from that. Like, we need a compendium of the lessons.
That's lesson, what we need. Lesson 17, stop blaming the Jews.
Yeah, okay, yes.
Now, here's why.
That's one, right.
Like, here's why.
Yeah, like, this is a book we need to write.
Have a phone that connects between Washington and Moscow. How mm-hmm. about that?
Yeah, here's have why. That phone. Yeah, yes. and use it occasionally.
But I think that it's interesting to me that there really is a lot of interest in documentary and history stuff.
Yeah.
That's a surprise to me, like seeing like how popular documentaries are on Netflix when Netflix offers you in with literally equal effort, like clicking on one side of the screen versus the other. You can watch anything. So many people opt for documentaries.
There,
there's something there's a rational and constructive human hunger to learn stuff. And that to me is very heartening. You know, yeah. I feel like, that's room to run.
I agree. I agree with that. And I think the success of your podcast to me was very reassuring. Mm. I think the lessons baked into your podcast are so important and meaningful and prescient. And I was just so thrilled that so many people were getting that.
Thank you.
With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive budget beach finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Generations Riviera Maya Resort and do your deal at cheapcaribbean.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you, something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Both of these stories, Abel Archer, or Snafu, I should say, and Ultra, are podcasts. And you have an incredible career as a broadcaster, legendary broadcaster for many, many years. How has this kind of segue back into audio gone, and how did it affect how you considered telling this story?
It's a good question, because it definitely—
sort of falling in love with the story and doing the research and realizing like kind of where it was going and what the bottom line of it was going to be and everything. It was definitely an open question as to how to produce it. Like I know that I could write a book about it because I'm almost done with the book about it now, or I could try to produce it for TV or try to make it into a movie or do some other thing. And ultimately, I decided to do it as a podcast because I'm kind of just in love with audio. I think that my background in radio was, I don't know if that if it stamped a love for audio on me or if I was just wired that way anyway. But when I even when I do TV shows and stuff, like I don't really think about what stuff looks like. I think of the visual presentation of whatever's going on. It's just kind of decoration for the words. And when you do audio, there's this, I don't know, level of, I don't want to say like, I don't want to be too sappy about it, but there's a sort of level of intensity. Like you're kind of speaking into somebody's ear rather than sitting in front of them talking. And it's can be intense and it's also unforgiving. I think you have to be more precise in an audio environment and than you do when you have the help of visuals to distract people. So I find it to be more challenging and more rewarding. It's also kind of more the way that I like to absorb information. I don't like to watch stuff as much as I like to listen to it.
That's interesting. I feel similarly. I found myself just devouring podcasts and audiobooks in a way that I never really consumed television. I mean, I watch TV, of course, but I was never like a, you know, addicted to shows or anything. But then podcasts would just suck me in, and I realized like this incredibly powerful vehicle, and the way that we work with a microphone, it's incredibly intimate. And I love that.
I'm pregnant. Oh, Jesus. Ed?
I'm very powerful. My voice is very powerful. No, but I feel when I watch a documentary, especially something historical, a lot of times you can feel the sweatiness of the visuals. They clearly had to dig for something to put here. Like, okay, we're panning over photographs here. We've got some weird visual metaphor happening, or we're looking at like reenactment footage. Sometimes it just feels like, okay, we get it. Like you had to put something there and you didn't have something. But with audio, there's no cheating. It's all there. It's all
speaking
meaningful.
Right into the person's ear, which is inside their head, which is right next to their brain.
It's like a laser.
And I found that in an interesting way when we put out the first couple episodes of Ultra. We didn't make up any of the sound. All the sound that we used was real tape. But a lot of people thought that we had faked the news broadcasts, that we had found actors who were going to speak in weird old transatlantic accents.
It is hard to believe that broadcasters spoke in this heightened tone like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of wild, but they really did.
We told
did.
Ourselves that old-timey news was all very objective and staid, and there wasn't any opinion or emotion in it. Yeah.
BS. No, but they really did talk like this.
And they threw all sorts of shade, and they were snide, and they were, and lots of asides and lots of opinion, and that's what it sounded like.
Well, so tell us what's happening next with Ultra, because there's a very exciting sort of next step.
Yeah, I kind of can't believe it, but Steven Spielberg optioned Ultra to make a movie out of it. And
who's
so
that?
He's this guy, you know, he's an up and comer. He's the one I sort of wanted to watch.
First of all, huge congratulations. And it's a no-brainer.
You.
This makes perfect sense. The story is so riveting.
I hope that is true. I mean, what I am learning is as I am sort of tiptoeing into this side of the world where I have never been before, is that a movie's going to be made is, you know.
Yeah. We're going to ruin it with visuals.
Is a movie going to be made? Like, until someone is buying a ticket, receiving their change, and walking into a dark room where a projector is running, I don't believe the movie exists. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot that goes in between optioning a movie and then it actually coming into the world. And so I believe that it's going to be a movie, but we'll see. I know. I mean, you know, I did this. My previous podcast was called Bagman, was about about Spiro Agnew. And that's also in the movie-making process. That's going to be a focus features film. But it just takes a long time, and there's all sorts of things that happen. And, I mean, I'm used to a daily production cable news world where you think of something in the morning, and it's on TV at night, and then you have to stop thinking about it because you got to do something else the next day. And
that ain't how we make movies, Rachel.
No, I know. I'm learning.
There's a whole rigmarole, and you're very wise to kind of hold off on the excitement of having a movie until you're walking in the door. But just having a movie optioned by someone like Spielberg is so thrilling, or focus features for the Agnew story. Those are just such credible storytellers, and you can sort of feel confident that these stories will be handled very well. I feel like this would be such a cool movie.
Both of them feel like movies to me, too. Like, I watch as much, streaming television and miniseries and all that stuff as anybody else. But I do feel like both of these stories, seem like sit down for 2 hours and watch a single arc in the movie theater. Like,
amen.
It just, and I just love for it to work in both cases. So
I also think I should play Ojan Raghi.
Okay. Yeah.
I think I should be Raghi in this movie, right? I mean, that just feels obvious.
Obvious.
Yeah.
Obvious, for sure.
Okay, so both of our podcasts have a lot of present day relevance and prescience, and yours, I think, is really, really intensely relevant to right now. So, at what stage in your process did the events of January 6th happen? Was that, were you already working on this podcast?
No, I wasn't working on the sedition trial by that point. What was weird is that the resonant stuff, like, I felt like I got a little kick in the teeth from the universe, because when the first episode of Ultra was posted, when we published, was the day that the Oath Keepers sedition trial started. So that was weird.
Wow.
And then it was 8 episodes, and by the time we got to episode 8 was when we were waiting for the verdict. So it was really just, that was uncanny.
Yeah.
I just felt like that was unsettling almost. But, it also, I feel like you do, in trying to pick the right story to tell, you have to believe in the story on its own terms, sort of regardless of the resonance. Like, yes, there is going to be resonance, and there are lessons to be learned and things to be gleaned from the past that could help us in our current contention. But I don't feel like you can't let that drive, That has to, a little bit of that is just going to be stuff that you can't see along the way. I was thinking about it with Abel Archer and Snafu with the before the Korean airliner was shot down, you highlight how the Russians were essentially giving bounties to their own side for people who were spotting radar incursions on the radar. And so you were essentially saying, like, that's bad news in terms of what eventually happens with this civilian airliner being shot down after being misidentified as a military threat in Russian airspace. Well, just within the past week, Russia just gave medals to the fighter pilots who dumped all that fuel on the U.S. Reaper drone over the Black Sea. It's the same. I mean, I'm sure you weren't thinking about that when you did Abel Archer and Snafu, but Russia is doing the same thing in monetarily and with military awards, rewarding people for doing incredibly reckless things that threaten conflict between the East and West.
Sure. Well, one of the things that I think was really profound in Ultra was what this idea that emerged that there was no legal remedy for all of this horrible behavior. Yeah. The legal remedies failed. There was a mistrial, and then the government basically just gave up on prosecuting these misdeeds, and because they didn't want the headache. And so Raghi sort of makes the case in that Meet the Press interview that the remedy then must be just transparency and information, getting it out there, educating the public. That's all you can do. When this bad behavior can't be actually meaningfully reprimanded in some way, all you can do is expose it.
Yeah.
And I think that's very powerful. It's also a little bit terrifying and disheartening. And I wonder if you feel like the January 6th trials they've obviously gone a lot smoother than the Great Sedition trial, but is that evidence of progress? Do you think we're doing better?
It's interesting because it really does, I think it cuts both ways. I think there is a case to be made by looking back at the fascist movements in this country that were supported by Nazi Germany, including an element of that operated inside the Congress. There's ways to look back at that, all that story that I tell in Ultra, and say, you know, some of these things were legit crimes and people should have gone to jail. And
right. That,
like, crimes were committed here and crimes should have been prosecuted as such, including by some members of Congress where that escaped punishment, I think largely because they bullied the Justice Department into not coming after them. And we're seeing a little bit of that happening. We're seeing some resonance with some of the stuff that's happening right now in our news cycle. But the sort of good news side of what Raghi was preaching on Meet the Press that day is that, you know, the people need to know this information. The legal remedy isn't there. The legal remedy is the legal solution has failed. The legal remedy cannot be used as the sum total of our response here. What has to happen is that the people need to know. And obviously, people knowing isn't an end in itself. That doesn't fix it. What he means, what goes unsaid, is that when the people know, they will act. And if you can trust Americans to defend our democracy and to stand up against tyranny and to reject authoritarianism and anti-Semitism and all the other things that go with it, but they need to know that it's happening. And so that
one would hope
calls on all of us. Yeah, I mean, it calls on journalists, it calls on activists, it calls on everybody who can contribute to the public record, including, you know, dorks making podcasts down the road. but hopefully it means that a well-informed public will make righteous decisions, and I want to believe that.
I do too. And I think that's a good note to end on. Rachel, thank you so, so very much for jumping in the booth here and having this chat with us. It's just really, really fun. And I wish you the best of luck with the movie adaptation.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks. This has been super fun. I appreciate it.
Snafu is a production of iHeartRadio, Film Nation Entertainment, and Pacific Electric Picture Company in association with Gilded Audio. It's executive produced by me, Ed Helms, Milan Pipelka, Mike Falbo, Andy Chug, and Whitney Donaldson. Our lead producers are Sarah Joyner and Alyssa Martino. Our producer is Carl Nellis. Associate producer, Tori Smith. Our senior editor is Jeffrey Lewis. Olivia Canny is our production assistant. Our creative executive is Brett Harris. Engineering and technical direction by Nick Dooley. Special thanks to Allison Cohen and Matt Eisenstadt.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive budget beach finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Ocean by H10 Hotels and do your deal at CheapCaribbean.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.